Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. A new Netflix film is a sweeping tale of generational trauma, violence, and perversion of faith in a small town post-World War II Ohio. The film is called The Devil All the Time, and it stars Tom Holland as Arvin, a young man orphaned as a result of tragic illness and a shocking act of violence. Arvin is fiercely loyal to his adopted sister, Lenora, whose own past is marred by an act of religious-inspired brutality. Despite this, Lenora is steadfast in her own faith, leaving her vulnerable when a lecherous preacher, played by Robert Pattinson, comes to town. And then there are Sandy and Carl, a married couple who enjoy picking up unsuspecting hitchhikers and not dropping them off, shall we say. You just have to watch to see how all these stories come together. The Devil All the Time is based on a novel of the same name by Donald Ray Pollack. It was adapted for the screen and directed by Antonio Campos, and it has a world-class cast. Tom Holland, Robert Pattinson, Eliza Scanlon, Riley Keough, Sebastian Stan, and so many more make up this great ensemble. You can watch The Devil All the Time starting today on Netflix. I suggest you do it with the lights on, however. Writer and director Antonio Campos joins us now. Antonio, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was a really good summary of a very hard film to summarize. I still am trying to do it.
Well, there you go. I think it's interesting because it was based on a novel, this novel by Donald Ray Pollack. How did you know that this book was one that you wanted to adapt for screen, given how complex the storylines are?
I was given the book by Randall Poster, who people probably know as a music supervisor. He's a pretty prolific music supervisor. But he gave me the book and he said, look, I love this book. And if you like it, then I'd love to, you know, produce it with you and get it made. And I read it and I loved it. And I said, I really want to do it, but I want to do it with my brother. I want to co-write with my brother. And he was on board. And I think the thing that jumped out at me first was that the book captured two of my favorite genres, which are Southern Gothic and hard-boiled sort of crime fiction, kind of like Flannery O'Connor and Jim Thompson, mm-hmm. in one book. But then sort of like the thing that really grabbed me was that at its core, there was this sort of generational story about a father and a son and the trauma that the father passes down to the son, and the trauma that's so tied into faith and violence, and then watching the son have to live with that, process it, and then either continue down the cycle or break it. And I just felt like, you know, because it has a very strong spine, it could go in all these different directions, mm-hmm. and always sort of get back to what it's really about. And I saw that, and my brother saw that, and we kind of saw our way into it. And that's kind of, that was sort of like, we saw a way into it, and so we decided we wanted to tackle it, even though it was very complicated.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the novelist is your narrator in this film, correct?
He is, yeah. Don Pollack is the narrator.
Why did you go that direction? It's kind of interesting. It, to me, it felt like somebody saying, you know, pull up a tree stump, I got a crazy story to tell you.
You know, it was a little bit of that. The idea to have a narrator came pretty early on, and I had heard Don's voice in one interview. He doesn't really do a lot of interviews. He's a pretty shy guy, and I'd heard his voice, and I thought it was really striking. And then I got to know him, and his voice was in my head all the time, and I just thought, well, who else better to tell this story? Who but the creator of it, you know? Who knows every character inside and out, and who knows this place, not only because he wrote the book, but because he grew up in Knockem Stiff, Ohio, and he's lived around Knockem Stiff in the neighboring town called Chillicothe since he was a boy, you know? And so it just felt like the only voice that could play that role, could fill that role. And then that's how it kind of came to be. And he said yes, which was I was scared he would know because I didn't have a plan B.
Well, let's talk about voices here, because there are some pretty amazing thick accents in this film from a lot of actors who are British and Australian. So, for example, let's hear Tom Holland talking a bit about the importance of nailing the accent. So we'll get to hear Tom Holland, who a lot of people know is playing Spider-Man, nailing this accent.
It's exciting for me to be able to play this character who talks with a lower register, who's slower, who talks with maybe a more menacing voice.
That ain't no preacher. He's as bad as they got on the damn radio.
With a film like this, the most important first step is getting the accent right. If you don't get the accent right, then you may as well not do it.
So tell me about how your actors were able to get those accents. Did they work with any sort of specific voice coach?
Yeah, they worked with a guy named Rick Lipton. And so we were really obsessed with it, and we did a few things. So Rick is from Ohio, so he has a good handle on that part of the world and the sound of that part of the world. So he has his process. And then what I did was I started to build a bit of a library of voices. The main one would be Don. And then Don had gotten some people to also contribute their voices and read some of the dialogue in the script. And then he got some people from West Virginia to get that part of the story. And then we also pulled from some references. One of the key references was a film from the 60s called Holy Ghost People, which was sort of about a backwoods church, and featured some very sort of powerful testimonials from people in that community. So we started to build the library of these voices. We were really specific about, okay, there's the sound of Knock 'em Stiff, which is a holler, and then there's the sound of Mead, which is a neighboring city. They sound slightly different. Mm-hmm. And then in West Virginia, you know, West Virginia sounds it sounds different than Southern Ohio, and people in Southern Ohio might think people from West Virginia sound like a hillbilly or something. You know, there's like a kind of, there's these subtle differences in the way that they sound and the way they hear each other. And so that was, we were just kind of constantly working on it, and the actors would, you know, work with Rick Lipton and send audio to me. The only one that just was kind of off in his own world and just coming up with this crazy accent on his own was really Rob Pattinson, who exists outside of the world of the movie. So he kind of has a little bit more freedom with inventing something.
I think he's just such a great actor. I think he's so versatile. And he's really kind of sort of amazingly, he's got the easy sleazy thing down in this film.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's amazing. And he just kind of, we had talked through the process of, you know, getting ready for the role and everything. And we talked about the character, but he was very protective of what he was up to. It was kind of interesting. It was kind of mysterious. And I kind of liked it. You know, I wasn't worried that he was going to deliver. I just kind of was very excited to see what he came up with. And so he showed up on set in that sort of frilly, shirt and that sort of, powder blue suit in character with that voice. And then once he showed up in character with that voice, it was just fun. It was just playtime.
My guest is Antonio Campos, writer-director of the film The Devil All the Time. So there are these three sort of general storylines we're following, each with its own kind of tragedy or violence to it. A small family story of tragedy of a boy orphaned. And then there is a woman, one family where the father kills the mother, and then the sadistic married couple who picks up people and takes pictures of them in various different positions and then kills them, usually men. But there is religion in each one of these, religious fervor in each of these families' storylines. What do you think the story explores about religious fervor?
Well, for me, it's about the danger of extreme religion. And the film is really presenting a world that presenting the absence of God. And so I was interested in observing believers and seeing what would happen, you know, what happens when these characters, these people, are desperately looking for answers and waiting for God to speak to them. When they don't get a response, they fill that absence themselves. They come up with an answer themselves, and that's where the danger is. It's with man. It's with their imagination, where their minds can take them. Because these characters are all traumatized and they're all scarred in one way or another, and they're not dealing with that trauma. Willard, the main character, mm-hmm. you know, he's come back from war and he's seen horrible things. He's done some horrible things, but he decides not to talk about it. So he's talking. He finds his way of dealing with it is to go to this place that he's invented, this prayer log, this quiet clearing mm-hmm. behind his house, where he can kind of engage in a dialogue in his head and have this conversation with himself. And he finds peace for a while, but obviously there's so much that he hasn't dealt with, and that's where things get, you know, problematic.
I'm curious what you think is sort of interesting about violence in this film. It's sort of surprising. I'm not giving too much away. The people who are sort of some of the good-hearted people are the most violent in some way, specifically mm-hmm. Tom Holland's character. What was it about violence that you thought would be interesting to try to discuss on film?
Well, I think, you know, we experience violence in so many different ways in movies and in TV, like in terms of in fiction. And I've always approached it. I have a certain restraint in the way that I try and present these things. And I'm always interested in sort of making these moments that are violent in the movie very impactful. But not by being gory, but by sort of allowing them to land emotionally and to not turn away. And there's really not a lot of people, if you look at sort of comparison, some action movies, for instance, where people die left and right. In this film, our characters are the ones that are going to die. And these are the people that we've come to know, some of them very bad, some of them morally complicated, and we've gotten invested. So when they go, there's an emotional punch. There's mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like just it just doesn't feel like, you know, another body on the body count. It's a person that we've gotten to know through the course of the story. So, you know, that's kind of how I treat these kind of acts in the movie. Mm-hmm. And violence is always something that, you know, as a filmmaker, that you want to see if you can approach in a new way. And so,
in an artistic way.
I tried that.
Yeah.
In an artistic way, yeah.
The name of the film is The Devil All the Time. Writer-director Antonio Campos has been our guest. Antonio, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.